Hello, this is Tobin Beck at Concordia University in Seward, and I have with me the Reverend Dr. John Mayle. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And John is the Executive Director of the Mission of Christ Network and also is an adjunct professor at Concordia. So can you explain a little bit what that all means?
Sure. I'd be glad to. So when I came out of the mission field, I came here to Concordia and began serving a little bit as the church relations and outreach director. And I taught missions classes as well. And the board for Mission of Christ Network contacted me and asked me if I would consider being the executive director. Their executive director was going into business, and I said, sure. And so I remain here in Seward, and I continue to teach one class per semester and then a May term. And it's been great. It's been really, really fun. And our organization is virtual, so we have people in Texas and Illinois and Missouri and all over the place. So it's okay for me to be here.
So what does the mission do?
Mission of Christ Network is focused on helping especially lay people be involved in intentional gospel proclamation, and the majority of that is in a foreign setting, in a cross-cultural setting. So we have at this time about 40 individuals that are serving in 14 different countries. And most of them have two-year commitments, and very few of them only stay 2 years. Most of them stay longer. Then we have three couples, and they usually go in for 3 weeks to 3 months at a time. But they have a long-term commitment, usually with an education institution.
Okay. Wow, that sounds fascinating.
It is.
So tell me a little bit about your background and then about your mission work. But first of all, where did you go to school?
I got an associate's degree from St. Paul's College in Concordia, Missouri, and a BA from Concordia Ann Arbor. And then I got a master's in an MDiv from Concordia St. Louis in 85. And I got a doctorate from them as well.
Okay. And then what did you do after that?
Okay. So I graduated in 85 and I took a rural parish. It was a gravel road church in Lincoln County, Kansas. And it just so happened that my father grew up in the other side of the county, and he was so excited that I was going back there. So it was a beautiful little parish, and we had about 310 baptized and 125 or so in church on Sunday. It was fantastic. It was just wonderful. Great place to. We had a couple of little girls while we were there, and I was there 8 years when the mission board asked me to fill out paper, which I did. And I received a call to serve as a church planter in Moscow, which I accepted.
And that's Moscow, Russia.
That's correct. Yeah. So it was 93, and everything was just opening up. And I was the first career missionary in Moscow.
So what does a church planter do?
That is a great question. So most church planters, the gospel is generally shared within the context of a relationship. So this requires you learn a language, you find out culturally where you can build relationships, build interest in studying God's word, and Bible studies usually turn into congregations if God leads it that way. So it's really a following God's mission. God's already doing the work. God's been there. God's been everywhere. And it's very exciting. So we did start one little congregation on our, I guess you would call it, first Sunday as a congregation. We confirmed 35 people.
Wow.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And so, I don't know where it is today. I'm always afraid to ask, you know, those things. And then I served as a vacancy pastor. So in those days, there were a lot of Russian pastors that were not well educated, and it was the intention of our synod and the Ingrian Lutheran Synod, our partner church in Russia, that they be educated further. And so many of them went to Concordia Fort Wayne, where Kurt Markwartz, a Russian speaker, and he could teach them, and they have ongoing education there. So for a couple of years, I served as a vacancy pastor in a already established parish.
And this was in Moscow?
This was in Moscow.
And can you describe that a bit? What was the congregation like?
It was a congregation of a lot of people where in those years, they had an identity crisis. Who are we? We are no longer Soviets. Are we Russian? Are we German-Russian? Are we Latvian, Lithuanian, Lutherans? Are we Finnish? And so many people were looking for their roots. And many people just showed up because they knew that Grandpa had been a Lutheran. And so they were interested in this. Others came because they were truly interested in the gospel. I have to say that one of the most poignant experiences was one Sunday. It was, I tell this story a lot because it was shaping for me. But there was a Reformation service where we had actual confirmation. We had 11 individuals. And they ranged in age from about 14 to 74. The 74-year-old at that time had been a small child during World War II. And she had a rough time afterwards. She and her sister lived with their uncle, who was not very happy to be taking care of them. And they were poor, but they were making it. And one day, she went to school, and there was a box on the teacher's desk sent from Christians in America, a care package. So the kids lined up, and they one at a time went forward. The teacher reached into the box and handed them something. So this lady, Raisa Plotnikova, came to me afterwards, and she said, "Do you know why I became a member of this congregation? Do you know why I'm a Christian today?" I said, "Jesus." And she said, "Well, that's good, but that's not it." She said, "I'd heard all the stories about Americans and how evil they were, and they're baby killers, and there's Vietnam and all this. But I knew differently because of this care package and the fact that I had something tangible." And at that moment, she reached into her purse and pulled out these knitting needles. She said, "I've been knitting with these needles for 50 years. So when I heard there was an American who was preaching at this church, I just had to come and see what you had to say." So 50 years before, somebody had put knitting needles into a box. And she, Raisa, will never know who that was, and that lady never knew who received those. But God used those 50 years on to bring Raisa Plotnikova into a relationship with her Lord. And I always think about, you know, so it's not yay, John. It's, wow, God, that's amazing. Amazing.
That is. That's a powerful story.
It is. Yeah. And but besides working with those people, wonderful, wonderful people, really fantastic, I also organized what we called the Moscow Seminars, and those were monthly meetings where we would bring pastors who had not been fully educated into Moscow, and we would host them at a sanatorium or kind of like a rest home, and we would bring in really usually very, very big names from both of our American seminaries and give them 3 days of theology, which they then eagerly took back. And so I had the opportunity to help shape the education of some of those men.
So what was it like working in Russia at this time?
It was like the Wild West, seriously. I mean, you know, when we arrived there, we first went into Siberia and they were still rationing food. And so you couldn't just go and get salt every day. You couldn't find toilet paper every day. You just had to go to the market every day and see what was there. And then we came into Moscow, and there was AK-47 gunfire at night, and the building next to ours was bombed out because on the first floor was a newspaper that had printed something somebody didn't like. And just at midnight, it It was a huge explosion. Glass went everywhere. So it was like that. And right up until we were there 11 years in country, and the week we were packing up to leave, one block from us, we heard the explosion, and it was a suicide bomber, basically. He didn't mean to be a suicide bomber, but he placed a briefcase bomb on the top of a car at a stoplight and tried to get away, and it killed him and all the occupants in the car and blew out the windows four stories up on all four corners of this. I mean, it was powerful.
So how frequent were things like that?
And it seemed that every few months we'd have something. One summer it was apartment buildings where the Chechens would pack fertilizer bombs into the basement, and they would just touch them off, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, and they would just crumble. So you'd have 14 or 17 stories just all fall.
In your job as a church planter and as an interim pastor there, what was it like working with the government?
They were very, very good to us, I would say. Maybe they ignored us, and we thought that was good. There were times when we knew that we were being monitored, of course. We had some of our missionaries that where the FSB would come up and they would hold a recording of a cell phone call that you just had and say, do you recognize this? And, you know, so a little intimidation here and there just to make sure we knew that we were guests in the country.
And but they'd ask you about the recording. To what end? What would they be trying to get you to do?
No, just
to let you know that
just
they were
to
listening.
Let us know, yeah. But we operated in the light. I mean, that was one of our principles, were the Lutheran Church. We're not sneaking around in the dark, smuggling Bibles or anything anywhere.
Though I understand you had some restrictions on your visa or limitations.
I did. As time went on, so in 2004 when we left, it was already becoming difficult, and two-entry visas were the six-month two-entry visas were all that we could get. So it restricted my travel, and I had become a regional director. So I was responsible for work in Europe and all the former Soviet Union. So anytime I left Russia to go to Kazakhstan or Kyrgyzstan or any of those places where we had work, that was the end of my travel. And I had to wait till I had a new visa. So at that time, I moved to Germany for a couple of years.
Okay. During the time you were in Russia, are there any other stories that stand out for you or for you and your work or you and your family? Because at this point, you and your wife, you have three kids at this point.
Well, yeah, we had Ted. Ted was born in Finland, so we left the country a couple of weeks before he was due.
Okay. And your wife's name, by the way?
Susan.
And your kids' names are?
Katrina's our eldest, and Louisa's our middle child. She was one. She was speaking quite well when we came, and she quit talking because she had a Russian, you know, kid she played with and Russian nanny, and she started to confuse English and Russian. Hmm. So she'd hear a dog bark, and she'd go, "Sabaka," you know, and... And she started calling Susan Mamichka, which was really sweet. But and then Teddy came along. He was born in Finland, and he had his first airplane ride when he was 5 days old. Hmm. We flew from Helsinki back to Moscow.
Wow.
Yeah.
So anything else that stands out for you during that time?
Well, there are, of course, a lot of stories. It's very humbling to know that you're not in charge, right? So we follow God, and you learn the hard way. And I would say that one of the most impressive things that taught me this was there was a lady and her husband, Olga Nosova, and her husband, Valery, and son, Ilya, knocked on my door. So everybody lived in apartment buildings, and there was a lock at the bottom of the apartment building, so you couldn't even get into the stairwell. And we lived on the 10th floor, and so how they got in, we have no idea. But she knocked on my door. And she said, "I am Olga, and I know your friend Nancy." And I said, "Okay." She says, "Can we come in?" All right. So she told me her story that she had been on an exchange program in Ohio and had gone with her hostess into a bank to get some cash. And the teller said, "Oh, you're from Russia. I know somebody in Russia. His name is John Mayle, and here's his address. He will teach you about Jesus."
Wow.
And so she came at my door and came and she said, we have a group of about 15 people, and we would like for you to come teach us about Jesus. And I said, "Oh, I can't do that because I'm supposed to learn the language and then find a way into the culture and start a Bible study and then plant a church." And she said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Will you change your mind later, do you think?" And I said, "Oh, maybe when I learn enough Russian and I, you know, so on." And she walked out the door and Susan, my wife, my dear wife, whom I love, she said, "Are you crazy? What is wrong with you?" And I said, "It's not according to the plan." And she said, "Whose plan?" And a week later, Olga, Valeri, and Ilya showed up again and they said, "Are you ready now?"
Wow.
I said, "Yes, wow. I am ready." And so that was the beginning of the church plant that we started, and it was fantastic. We had as many as 200 people come on a Saturday morning. 200 people.
And where were they coming?
They would come to, we would have Bible studies or worship services or we had kids.
But you had a facility.
It was in a schoolhouse, a school building. Yeah. We started in a classroom and we ended up in the auditorium.
Wow. Yeah, that's great.
It had nothing to do with John Mayle. I mean, you know, that's the great part about it is this is great. And the only reason I knew Nancy Helmke is because her husband wanted to hunt pheasant in Kansas and asked her pastor. He asked his pastor if he knew anybody in Kansas, and he came out and stayed in the parsonage and spent a week hunting pheasant.
Wow. That is, Lord works in strange and mysterious ways.
It's fantastic. It's just fantastic.
That's a wonderful story. Okay, so from Moscow, what happens after that?
Moscow to Germany a couple of years, and then I got a telephone call from David Berner, our exec in St. Louis, and he said, "Would you consider moving to Asia?" And I said, "Of course." And it's one of my weaknesses. I can't say no. So I took the call in 2006, and we moved to Hong Kong. So at that time, our girls were in high school in Concordia, Missouri at St. Paul Lutheran High School, at the boarding school there. And we had Ted with us, and he was in middle school, and it was a fantastic journey. I was there 7 years, almost eight, and to the point where we actually have landed immigrant status, so we are permanent residents there and do not need visas to work anymore.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
So yeah. Tell me what the work there was like and
The vast majority of what I did was really I was doing church relations. So we have a lot of partner churches. So in the economy of God's mission, it always seems that whenever there's a great upheaval, there is a huge opportunity. Somebody once said that if you want to grow the church, then pray for persecution because that's when the church grows. So after World War II and then after Vietnam, tremendous amount of opportunity for us. So after World War II, Lutheran churches started in Korea, Japan, the Philippines, Taiwan, Papua New Guinea. So all of those were really following that. And then Vietnam and Cambodia, work began there after the American War, as they call it, in Southeast Asia. So it was really, really wonderful. Things are different. I mean, you know, here's another interesting story. So in 49, there was a little thing that happened in China. There's a little communist takeover and an expulsion of all of Westerners, especially missionaries. So our missionaries, some of them went to Taiwan, and four of them three women and a pastor went to Hong Kong, and they took that KCR down. And the border was open for about 18 months. The British left the border open, and 100,000 refugees per month flooded in. And these Mandarin speakers, missionaries, these Mandarin-speaking missionaries, saw all these Mandarin-speaking refugees and immediately jumped in. And they started rooftop schools because the school system in Hong Kong was overwhelmed. And they began teaching on the rooftops of anything, any place that they could find. And out of that grew the Lutheran Church Hong Kong Synod and school system today that has about 35 schools and 18,000 students in it. So it's just fantastic ministry and excellent human care work, you know, and these three gals and this pastor are a credit. They stayed there and worked. And there are other incredible people besides Martha Boss and Gertrude Simon. There are people who remain to this day who continue to work. Carol Halter especially comes to mind. She's a legend. She's incredible. Yeah. So the whole situation is different. So lots of ancestor worship in Russia. In 1988, they celebrated 1,000 years as a Christian nation. And that's when Prince Vladimir was baptized in Kiev. And Asia is maybe 5% Christian. So many places, much less. Cambodia, they say 2. Thailand, 0.7. So not a strong foothold for the gospel, in spite of the fact that already in the 700s it came from the Middle East over. And there are steles in Xi'an and a pagoda that from the 700s that has a relief of the nativity. Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, but it's still rejected as a Western religion. So it's very difficult. Ancestor worship is probably the most prominent thing.
So what about how the church, the Lutheran church with mainland China, did you have much connection with
China? So mainland, we had work in mainland and some incredible work, but they are what they call post-denominational. So they have a government-run Protestant church and a government-run Catholic church. So we did have work there, but it wasn't traditional word and sacrament work that we would mm-hmm. see. That can only happen if you were going to do it in the underground church. And we tried very hard to stay above ground and work and build relationships with the church and the church community so that when it does become possible, we will have an entree. And our partner church in Hong Kong believes that there will be an invitation and that they will be invited in. And whether or not the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is invited in along with them remains to be seen.
Sounds wonderful to have that hope and that anticipation that faith. Any stories that stand out from you from your time in Hong Kong?
In Hong Kong? There are a lot of individual stories that are less about my interaction, but more about what it is that God is doing in a bigger picture. Because of the fact that the Hong Kong Synod had a relationship with us, and the Hong Kong Synod has a relationship with the church in mainland China, we were invited to actually have a worship service in their main church in Shenzhen on Sunday nights. So 7 o'clock on a Sunday night. And it could be in English and full control of the worship service. Chinese people can attend. And we have had that opportunity for the last 2.5 years, and more than that. I want to say 4 years. So I have had the opportunity to go up and preach to 500, you know, Chinese people sitting out there in an audience, and it's just unbelievable. It's fantastic. And many of these are PhD recipients who have come to America, come to faith here, and are not interested in attending the Chinese church. And they feel more comfortable in an English language setting. So you would recognize the service as a Lutheran. Very much. I mean, it's just, yeah. And they love it so much. The Chinese love it so much. The Chinese church loves it so much that they have asked for it to be duplicated. So there are now two places in Shenzhen, and they asked for a third. So really, really fantastic.
Wow, that's great. If people here want to help with these missions like this, what can they do?
That's a great question. There are so many opportunities, and I would say the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is the Office of International Mission. It's a fantastic place if you're interested in supporting missionaries themselves. Mission Central, I would say Google Mission Central and talk to Gary Teese about that. If you're interested in Mission of Christ Network, missionofchrist.org is the place to go. And look at the website, look around on it, try and figure out if there's something there that you'd like to support, a missionary that you'd like to support in one of the 14 countries where we are serving.
Okay. And any final thoughts?
I would say everybody needs to go on a mission trip. Everybody needs to get outside of their own comfort zones, because when we're out of control, guess who's in control? God. If there's anything I learned in missions, it's that we need to give up control and let God be in control and build relationships, because it's within that context that the gospel can be shared. Look at the New Testament. That's what you see over and over and over again. So,
well, I want to thank you very much for being here talking with me.
Yeah.
And I'm Tobin Beck at Concordia University in Seward, here today with Reverend Dr. John Mayle. And thanks, everybody, for listening.